Hello and welcome to the Behind Closed Doors podcast. My name is Alicia Abberley and I'm so grateful that you've joined us in this space. Behind Closed Doors is all about the types of conversations that we only usually have with our best friend, our partner, our counsellor, our coach. And sometimes it's the conversations that we don't actually have with anybody else at all. The women that are interviewed in this space are all women that are making a difference to the planet. They're women that are inspiring and empowering. The intention is that you too will feel inspired and empowered by these conversations. So grab a cup of your favorite drink, pop your feet up, and enjoy this episode of Behind Closed Doors.
Today's guest is one of Australia's most admired and respected financial advisors, a best-selling author, and corporate presenter. The mastermind behind the Equus Group's revolutionary approach to financial education, her passion for finance, and talent for communicating the often arduous jargon has made her highly sought after in the media, financial journalism, and speaking arena. Hello and welcome, Jodie Nolan.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Oh, so great to have you here. Thank you. We have some great topics to cover off today. So we're going to dive into five ways to change your relationship with money. We're going to have a chat about action versus inspiration, society's obsession with hard work, and GFC2, and is that a possibility?
Okay. Yeah. Wow. That's loaded. That's awesome.
Where would you like to start today?
Probably let's go back to the basics, the stuff that people, you know, potentially should have been taught in schools but haven't been taught. The things that I typically see people as a financial advisor, what I see people doing very well and what I see needs improvement often. And it's the little things that create huge exponential results. So, yeah, so that's the five things. So definitely we should start there and then talk about the different ways people typically make money. You know, how do you get from, you know, the wage week-to-week income to seriously having some substantial assets that then can create income for you? Or how do you create income? Where do we get those multiple streams from? How does that work? And then let's maybe round off at the end with a little bit about, you know, where our current global financial situation is, how that affects. I know your audience is, you know, international as well, not just Aussie audience. So that might be interesting for people to have a little bit of a more insight into, because I'm an economist by trade and I love it, you know, what's happening in the globe and how that might affect people going forward, which is really good in so much as the planning. You know, trying to work out, do they do shares, property, you know, how do they see this amassing and how can they mitigate their risk if there's anything potentially looming?
Fantastic. But that's awesome. I'm happy to go wherever you want to guide us. I am so not financially savvy. I'm really good at making money now. maybe I need to come and see you, Jodie, as well. So just before we start, and I don't usually do this, but I would love for you to give a little bit of background on you for, like, I met you maybe 10 years ago and you, I remember part of your story where you said, you know, you had a goal and a vision. I think you said by the age of 30, you wanted to be a self-made multimillionaire or a self-made millionaire. And I think you did that. You have a very unique story. So I'd love for you to share a little bit with us.
Yeah. Okay. So it's no secret, my story. It's been all over the news everywhere. And it goes back a fair while, but basically when I was around about 18, I went straight from high school, obviously, and moved into a legal arena where I started studying law. I didn't particularly enjoy it and I was working there as well. And friends of mine, who I saw at lunch, were driving nice cars and had a really good lifestyle and they were in a financial planning firm. And I started to be interested as to what is this industry. And so that I ended up working for them and moving across into that role in Brisbane in Queensland, Australia, and learnt as much as I could. And I studied at night, went to uni at night. Fast forward, you know, maybe 5 or 6 years, I'd bought my first property, I'd moved into shares, I'd done all of that in the financial planning arena as much as learning about it. I have this massive interest in it, which is strange, but I really enjoy it. And at school, I was not particularly math savvy. I didn't really love it. It wasn't a strong point for me. English maybe, but not maths. So to get into the finance arena where it's all maths, you know, derivatives and options and currency, and it's all math. But it was fun. It was an interest. And I went to work for some of the biggest banks in Australia, where I was, you know, up there ranked in the number one in the countries as a financial advisor, investing many millions a month for people. And then went to one of Australia's most independent financial planning firms. I was poached into that firm. And it was a few years before the GFC. And I prided myself on being, you know, 28, 29, being self-made. And when you have a good income and you've got assets making you money, it's a natural progression to keep growing that exponentially, you know, to be able to, money makes money. People hear that all the time. It doesn't even enter your head that you could possibly lose it. And because I'm in the game of finance, I'm really aware of risk. I prided myself on not being too risky. You know, I'm a little bit risk adverse by nature. So anyway, enters the GFC, which is a global financial crisis, which happened in 2008, which was basically the US market, housing market, subprime, they call it, basically started to unravel and collapse. And that created what we called as a contagion effect across the world, which saw all of the stock markets across the world collapse. So for those of you that are a little bit more savvy when it comes to your finances, I had mitigated my portfolio so that I could withstand a market fall of around about 30%, which was what the 1929 stock market crash happened. And that was the biggest to date in history. But the GFC, the markets halved. It was a 50% fall. And so when your investment was here and now it's suddenly half of what it is, the banks start saying, well, you know, you need to, it's called calling you on your margin loans, and they basically want you to prop it up with extra cash. Now, all of this was happening while I was in hospital having my daughter, my first baby. And so here I was, I think I was 31 at the time, and I had no clue any of this was happening. I knew the markets were falling, but I thought that my firm that I worked with would have it all under control. Unbeknownst to me, it was bigger than Ben-Hur. And the whole thing unraveled. And around about when my daughter was 6 weeks old, I found out the true extent of what was happening. And basically, it was like a dominoes effect. And one thing was cross-collateralized with another, and it all just imploded. And it wasn't just me, obviously. It was the whole globe. You know, markets didn't recover. Businesses didn't recover. People lost a lot of money. It was pretty full on. And for those of you that have been through it, you'll be very familiar with this. And it creates a rise of angst and sick in the guts and all of that. It was a really turbulent time. So pretty much lost everything. Walked away with just a little bit, didn't go bankrupt. I worked very hard over the next few years to not go under. I fell pregnant with my son when my daughter was 12 weeks old. So I think the way the universe moved it was I wasn't in a position to self-medicate with alcohol or fall into a big doldrums, because all of a sudden I had a newborn and I was pregnant. So I had a lot that I needed to live for. Very harrowing times. There was many, many a night where I didn't want to get up and I didn't see how I could find a way out. And my whole career was gone. All my wealth was gone, self-made multimillionaire, that and my husband as well. But it wasn't just us. It was the people that I loved and cared about, and they lost all of their wealth as well. And I felt very instrumental in all of that. So, the pain, even now, I have to choke back tears 10 years later. I often ask myself why this happened in this particular lifetime for me, you know, when I went out and, you know, when you care so much about people. And so it turned out to be Australia's biggest independent corporate collapse. I wrote a best-selling book about it. So then after that, I was jaded by the whole financial industry, because I've got a master's degree in finance, one of the highest degrees you can get in money. You know, I've got 20 years experience working for some of the Australia's biggest, largest top four banks, a lot of independent financial planning firms. You know, I've got the runs on the board. If I can't protect my wealth, what hope does the average mum and dad have? You know, with all my knowledge and my education, and you'd think that, you know, now if someone said the markets could, you know, fall 60%, I wouldn't laugh it off. I would think that is very plausible, you know, given that it's fallen 50%. So I think, there's a lot of experience that comes when you go through adversity. you know, you can, there's a lot of take home out of it. It took a lot of years to find the take home messages, but yeah. And so then I decided, well, I've got the knowledge, I've got the education, I've got the background. I need to create an education environment for people, because they're not taught this stuff in schools. You know, kids are, people are getting out of school and they don't understand the implications of taking on credit card or their hex debts, or they don't understand how tax is calculated in their part-time wages. And that then translates into, especially in Australia, because our cost of living is exorbitant. You know, we're number two in the world as far as the cost of living. It's really expensive to live here. You know, we've got hyperinflated property markets. We've got, at the moment, hyperinflated, you know, share markets. And people, they're hesitant to what to do next. They think that they want to get into their first home, but they don't know how. It's hard to save a deposit. Yeah, so and to, so then I sort of went on a bit of a crusade of, I don't know, it ignited this passion that was about it was about empowering other people to learn for themselves. And because if you learn this innately, and it doesn't have to be complicated, financial planners often are renowned for using jargon and making it sound complicated. And it was just about taking it and breaking it down and making it dead easy, which is what I want to talk about with your viewers today. So that they've got serious take-home, tangible things that tomorrow morning they can get up and go, right, I need to do this, this, and this. And I guess now looking back, you know, I've had to build my wealth again, which is very hard to do with two small children, which is what I was sort of referring to in that we need to look at multiple income streams. You know, you can't just rely on your part-time wage to get you from here to there when the cost of living is already so expensive. So yeah, so that's where I'm at now. I've actually just established a financial planning firm myself, and it took a while to make that decision because I liked being at arm's length and being able to say whatever I wanted. But the firm I'm with, that I'm licensed through ASIC with now as an advisor, they're awesome. So they allow me to still write for all the magazines that I write for, to do all the public speaking that I still do, because I still think it's crucial to talk to people about money. And then if they're in a position to see an advisor, awesome. And if they're not, they've got take homes to do tomorrow. And they've got somewhere to go to get more resource and information. So, yeah, that's it in a nutshell.
I love it. Thank you, Jodie. And your book, Surviving the Storm?
Yes, Surviving the Storm. So that's been out a couple of years now, on the bestseller list. Still sells beautifully, which is lovely. But, yeah, you can get that off my website, which I'm sure we'll put the links in. But yeah, and there's a lot of other resources. I started a program called Rich Mum Program, and keeping it affordable, you know, like $47, so that people have got, okay, so what are the tools that I need to go through to do this for myself? And I think if you're in a position where you can learn some of the strategies, then you're not necessarily having to blindly trust people either. You know, you can do this for the yourself. And I've seen this anecdotally work over the years so many times. And there's something pretty awesome about creating your own thing, you know, about moving yourself forward under your own steam and taking that initiative. And yeah, it's very empowering,
especially for us women. I think from a societal perspective, for us to do that, you know, it's shifting energetically again. Consciously, I guess, or consciousness is shifting again, where women are stepping back into that space of equality, I think.
Yeah, without doubt. You know, that's been one of the things that I've had an uphill battle with my whole life. You know, I'm blonde, I'm female, and I'm in a male-orientated environment. You know, finance is typically, most of the advisors are men. You know, especially 20 years ago when I was starting out, it was unheard of for women to be in finance. You know, and I've gone through all the corporate things where they'd say, how did you get senior financial advisor? You know, and there was all the talk and, you know, you can't do that stuff unless you've got the runs on the board, unless you're physically doing the investments and you're meeting your targets and those sorts of things. So I've had to develop a bit of a thick skin. And I think in the game too, getting my master's degree meant that was... you know, I felt very proud of myself doing that because I finished it when my babies were little and it was tough. But, you know, people can't argue with an MBA in finance. You know, they realize that you've done the hard yards as well. But I think you're right. I think things are changing. You know, in my experience, though, when I see husband and wife team sitting down doing their finances, quite often the women are the ones making the decision. You know, ultimately, they'll sit there with their partner, but their partner will be looking to them for guidance. You know, that they're the ones that run the hub of the house. You know, they're the ones that make decision on schooling and what furniture we'll buy and, you know, typically all of that sort of stuff. So, yeah, and I think to give them more control and be more, I don't know. The other thing that's come to my attention lately too is the lack of education around single women, you know, where they don't have a partner to bounce off. You know, they might have come out of divorce or something like that, and they feel like their power's been taken away from them. Empowering the women who are on their own because they don't have anyone else to talk to about things. So, you know, and then often not having someone to discuss things with means that they become paralyzed in their current environment. They're not sure, do they go left, do they go right, how do they move forward? So creating that safe place, which is what I love about what it is that you do, because you are constantly talking about and sharing strategies on how people can move forward, whether it's a fear, whether it's a confidence thing, whatever it is. And I think being able to acknowledge the fact that finance isn't fun for a lot of people that don't like money. You know, they've got blocks around it. It's hard. It's taxing. There's a scarcity mindset that's there. Yeah, which you can ask questions and I'll definitely talk you through that because I love that anecdotally, which is what I see daily. Yeah, the people who have the money don't even think for a second that they won't have more money, or they don't even think for a second they can't afford something. So to develop that confidence and to be unconsciously competent at not doing that. So one of the big things that I see with people initially is look at how you talk to yourself, you know, internally. Look at what you're saying to yourself. Well, I can't afford that. We can't do that this month. I can't afford those. It'd be nice if we could. I don't know where I'm going to get the money from for this. You know, they have all of this negative self-talk around money and finances, and it's a scarcity. It's a lack of. It's a fear. Where's next week's, you know, rent going to come from? And all that does is keep bringing you more of the same stuff. If you talk to somebody who's wealthy, and by wealthy I mean like as in dollar terms, rich, they might be wanting to do a project and they're not sure where they're going to get the money from yet for it, or they're not sure how they're going to finance that particular thing, but they don't think for a second that it won't happen. They just haven't worked out the strategy for it yet. And so one of the biggest shifts that you can do when it comes to mindset and money is to go just draw a line from today. Every single time you feel yourself think about where am I going to get the rent from? Oh my God, the credit card. Oh, the registrations come in for the cars, anything like that. Anytime you feel that rise of fear or angst or sick in the guts feeling around money, acknowledge it and then get rid of it. Flick it and just say, I trust that this is going to work out. And then I'm going to add to that, but you can't sit around going, I hope the universe provides, because it won't. It will if you are, and this is an energetic thing, which I'm sure your group will appreciate. When you're in the lows of lows, which I've been in, it's very hard to be vibrating higher and have your energy up to get the goodness in, to feel like you're worthy and you're deserved of this abundance and amazingness. So, and that's very difficult if you're in a low space or in a hard environment to try and go, oh, just trust that it's going to happen. The only way, in my opinion, that you can move from that environment into an abundant, tangible, moving, the universe is actually giving it to you, is by taking the actions. And when I say taking action, it means you literally can't bury your head in the sand. You have to draw a line today and go, these are the things I'm going to do. I'm going to stop the negative talk about it. And that's everything. That's telling your kids you can't afford stuff. That's wishful thinking. That's all the jealousy around what other people have. You know, I know that you work a lot on the gratitude, and I love that. And so do that as well. But then start to do things like, you know, take stock, and I'll stop talking in a second so you can ask me questions, but you need to take an exact snapshot of where you are today, you know, the money in versus the money out, and acknowledge that there's shortfalls. Acknowledge that you're struggling to get to the next level, whatever that is, whether it's buying a house or clearing debt or whatever it is for you. And I promise you, once you start looking at it, putting it down on paper, mapping how you're going to get from here to there, it's amazing how all this stuff starts opening up. And then you can start looking at things like, you know, your superannuation. You know, that's often somebody's greatest asset in retirement. And yet so many people just put it in a drawer and forget about it. That's money. And, you know, money has an energy to it. It has its own energy. And what you put to money, what you give it, whether you respect it, or you don't respect it. So it's how you treat it in your wallet. It's if you've got an investment, i.e. your superannuation, and you throw it into a drawer, you don't even look at it, you don't give it any time. And those sorts of things. This is an energy around this particular aspect of your life. And when you give it the right energy and the right attention, it's amazing how it responds.
100%. I don't even need to ask you questions. You just covered it all. I just like to add a couple of things. I just like to cover, like add a couple of things into that. So yeah. I've talked about this multiple times, and I feel like it's great to just like rehash it as well. So something that I did when I was in that position where I wasn't open to receiving, I guess, the money that I wanted in my life, I started to listen to Esther Hicks and her Abraham meditations. And so that helped me to shift my mindset a little bit, helped me to get out of where I was at. There's another practice that I like to do. I was just chatting with someone this morning about this, which I find so effective. And it's, what does the highest version of myself look like in regards to money? And so if we were to come from that space, it would be something along the lines of, so we write this out, and we just write as much as we can write. And it's, the highest version of myself is a self-made multimillionaire. The highest version of myself attracts money easily and with flow. The highest version of myself in regards to money is empowered. Like, just as an example, like you're coming up with different ideas for what it looks like for you to be the highest version of yourself in regards to money. So the highest version of self doesn't have fear and stress and angst around money, because the highest version of self has already got a great relationship with money. So in doing that activity, that's great to write that out. Where the action part comes in, what you're talking about before, Jody, is that every time you go into that scarcity mindset and that I don't have enough and oh shit, I don't want to pay the credit cards and whatever comes up for you, which I've been there too, every time that comes up, it's catching that thought and then remembering what you wrote. What does the highest version of myself look like? Because we shift our vibration and our energy in that space. And then it just, I don't know, it's an amazing practice. When I've done it in the past, and I've done it many times, it's, you can't stay in that lack mentality. You automatically just shift because you're thinking about the highest version of you. So they're just a couple of tools that I had, because I know that when you're in that state, like you said before, I know when you're in that state of scarcity mindset, it's really hard to get out of that. Yeah,
and I see it every day. You know, people come to me and they've got $80,000 worth of credit card debt and they're about to lose their house. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff that goes on for people all the time. Businesses are going under. And, you know, it's very hard to stop the bleed and do the things that you need to do to try and pull yourself out of it. But the alternative's really crap as well. You know, you can't keep living in a year on year on year on year of this sort of environment. There's a lot of people that don't want for more. You know, they're happy with the status quo. But I'd say that the people who are listening to your podcast aren't those sort of people. So giving them the tools which you just have, that allows them the tangible things that they can do tomorrow to get to move you from there to there. And I guess that's the whole point of it. Yeah, I love all of that energy sort of stuff. I really do think it works. You know, I tell a story that I had a big marble and glass mansion on the Sunshine Coast before it all went pear-shaped, big three-story thing worth $3 million. And it was beautiful. And it was, I built it. It was gorgeous. And I got a feng shui specialist up from Sydney, and a friend of mine actually organized it. And so she came to my house and she opened up my massive big double doors, and there's a big marble staircase down. And she said, oh no, we have to block that because that's the flow of money. And I was going, you're kidding me. I've spent a fortune getting the glass perfectly right so that when you walk in, you see the whole Sunshine Coast, you know, like it's unobtrusive. It's straight through to the ocean. You're not blocking that. That's not going to happen. Do other things, like put coins in corners or whatever it is that you do. She said, I'm telling you, when you open the doors, that's the flow of money. And I didn't remember that conversation until about 12 months after we'd lost everything.
Wow.
Probably a coincidence, but I feel like, you know, if someone was to say to me now, that's the flow of money through here, and they're into the feng shui, hugely, you know, knowledgeable in that sort of Chinese ancient energy, you know, stuff, I'd be like, okay, what do you want me to do? where do I put the big barrier up?
I've been there, Jodie. Not when you had it. I was there when the next owner took over, and oh my gosh, that is the most spectacular home that I've ever been into, I think.
Oh, really? Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I loved it. Yeah, it was beautiful.
Yeah, I wouldn't have put anything up either.
Thank you. Because looking back now, I'm like, oh. Yeah, look, and it's a lesson learned. It is what it is. It's probably just coincidence, but I don't take that chance anymore. And I am very I like to think that you know, when you're a good person, you mean well and you do well by others, that it that, you know, that the flow is there and you're in alignment and you're doing what you need to do. And I think that a lot of giving back for me is the education around money. A lot of people tend to have a fear of making money, and when you do the NLP stuff on it and you drill it down, it's not necessarily about the money. It's about they don't feel like they're good enough or they're worthy to be in that position. You know, or they might have associations where they grew up in an environment where money doesn't grow on trees, or people who were wealthy, you know, are snobs, or they're this or they're that. So they've got this inbuilt fear of, if I've got that, that will make me that sort of person. So doing the work around your scarcity mindset is important. It's not sort of something you can just put in the sand and hope for the best.
Agreed. And it's so much nicer to have a flow, isn't it? Just to have a flow of income, like to come in. Yeah. It is. It's so much nicer than living in that scarcity space. I've been in both, and I know it's much nicer to not wake up stressed out of where your next dollar is going to come from.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I was facing no career, you know, owing many millions. And even when I liquidated the lot, I was still left going, like, I physically don't know what to do next. You know, and in my position, I'd never rented before. I'd always owned all my properties. So I couldn't even get a rental house. You know, and I know that sounds like a first world problem, but that's massive. You know, two little kids, no job. And so it was, you know, and there was many sleepless nights. There was many a time when I just thought, I can't keep doing this. I wrote notes to everybody I loved one night because I didn't want to wake up in the morning. You know, you get that low. We can't see that there's a hope, that there's a future. I do understand that, and I won't. There's no judgment around not having wealth. There's no judgment around struggling. You know, it just is what it is. And it's the same as if someone was to come to you and say, "I've got a broken arm." You know, what do we do to fix it? So people give money this energy that it doesn't need. You know. It just doesn't need all the extra stuff that we give it, you know. If we treat it with respect and we know that we're good humans and we're doing the right by everybody else around us, and we, you know, we're working towards it. So that's where the action comes in. You can't just sit around in your lounge room and go, universe, you know, I want to win the lotto, you know, that. So doing those steps towards going, okay, well, how do I want to source an income? Where do I get, you know, this from? How do I then pay my debt down faster? How do I then create that nest egg where I can get that home that's mine? How do I, you know, and to be honest, anything to do with finances is just facts and figures. One of the greatest things I love about my job is that people will come to me with an agonizing decision. Do we sell the family home and downsize? Do we put this into investments and live off it? Do we buy the investment property? Do we, you know, and when it comes to money or financial decisions, it's just the due diligence. You just do the figures on it. The figures either work or they don't work. If they don't stack up, then you've got to ask yourself why you're doing it, because it doesn't make sense. And if they do stack up, then you go, sweet, let's do it. And it's the emotion that people attach to the decision that often brings them unstuck. So if you can look at it and just go, the figures either stack up or they don't, you know, the rest is removing the emotion from the financial decisions. And so that's been one of the most empowering things that I've ever been able to impart to other people around me, is to say, you know, let's, like in the next hour after we meet, in the next hour, you're going to walk out of here with everything off your shoulders, because we're removing the emotion from the decision. And if you decide that you still want that big house, even though it's going to cost you heaps more money, you have to work harder to have it, but you know that you're going to run around in your own home feeling like a princess, damn proud that you bought it, even though it's maybe not the greatest financial decision to make, then I would go with that still, because of all of the, you know, the stuff that goes with it. But you've done the due diligence, you've worked it all out, you know, and then you can be really comfortable in the decisions that you're making.
I like it. So Jodie, what are your five things that we talk about? What is it? The five ways to change your relationship with money.
Okay. Well, probably the first place to start is this scarcity mindset, which we've gone over. So, and I'm mindful of time, but if you can just halt yourself and just go every single time, catch yourself, pull yourself up on it, and be really, really aware that, you know, we're putting too much energy around money. And so you will sit there and not sleep at night. You'll agonize. You'll feel sick in the guts. And does the situation change? No. People who are science-based, all that anxiety, the fear, flight, the grief you give yourselves, the bad endorphins that get released, you know, like the cortisol and all of that sort of stuff that happens because you've had one thought about scarcity mindset and it's kept you awake at night. You know, so just try and be kind to yourself. Give yourself a break. Just realize that this is an energy that only you are putting into an environment that it doesn't need it. That's the first thing. The second thing is get realistic. You know, don't be ridiculous. Do your money in and your money out. Do your assets and your liabilities. What do I own? What do I owe? That is very empowering because it gives you a starting point. So you would imagine that if I'm going to map, so if I got, if somebody dumped me in the middle of Brisbane and said, you need to get to Sydney, but I didn't know where in Brisbane I was, I'm never going to get to Sydney because I don't know which direction to go in. Yeah. So it's the same with your finances. If you don't sit down and know today how much you've got in the bank, how much is in your super, how much do you owe on your house, you know, your whole snapshot today, you can't work out then where you want to go because you've got no ability of where you're starting. So that's the other thing. The third thing would be to stop the bleed. And when I say that, I mean, if you've got outgoings, you know, I share on my website and on my Facebook, you just have to Google, look for it, the quickest way to budget. And it's just using three highlighters and you just go through your statements and you use one highlighter to go all of the things that you can't possibly change at all. So that might be your rent or your mortgage or whatever. And then you go through and you highlight the things that you could change if you spend a bit of time researching it. So that might be your electricity and things like that. And then the third thing is the things that you don't really need. You know, they're the Target shopping and the BWS and the going to Kmart and all that sort of stuff that you could really just go without. Now, if you find that everything is in that third color, you've got so much room to move, it's not funny. But if you go through and you find that everything's that first one, the first color, things are really tight for you. But just being aware of that is crucial. And then that's when we start going, what can we sell? What can we free up? What side hustle can you do? You know, who do you know that's doing well that you can say, listen, I'm seeing you do well. How do you do it? Please tell me how you do it, because I'm literally, you know, everything in the first highlighter and I have no room to move and I want this. You know, I want this for me. How do I do it? And so that's the know your situation. Get your highlighters out. Make sure you're budgeting. It's not about doing big Excel spreadsheets. It's about keeping it simple. And probably the fourth thing would be to really so at the moment, the biggest thing that I see is debt. A lot of people have a lot of debt that they can't control. A lot of people think that their only alternative is to go bankrupt, which it isn't. So really get some good clarity around debt structures, you know, refinancing credit cards, you know, to a 12-month or an 18-month period, and then literally chopping it up so that you can just pay that down over time. And there, it's like a diet. I know this sounds terrible, but if you need to lose weight for your health or whatever reason, it's energy in versus energy out. And money's exactly the same. And so for a period of time, you're just going to have the money come in, but it doesn't go out, you know, to really concentrate on getting that down. And it's not forever, but I promise you, just the act of cleaning up your situation will create awareness and abundance and a change in energy for you. And while we're on that topic, which I probably should have added into number one, is the decluttering side of things. You know, people gloss over decluttering, and yet when I go and see people in their homes, it's the first thing I do. Show me where's your bill drawer? And they're like, oh, where's your filing cabinets? Where's your computer with your budget? Is all of your, you know, folders done in your computer well so that you can just put your hand on things? You know, do we have rules in your emails so that you can just see all your Telstra bills and, you know, things like that? So just really get clear about your current situation and clean it up. So if you can do nothing else in your world right now, you're stopping the negative self-talk scarcity mindset and you're cleaning up your world. And that will give you so much clarity. And then the fifth thing probably, which I think is crucial, is getting the right mentors around you. Because some days you just can't do it for yourself. And you can't know what you don't know. And sometimes you can't see the forest for the trees. If you've got the right mentor, now that might be a successful girlfriend. It might be someone in business that you respect. It might be your financial advisor that you bite the bullet and go and see. It might be a group that you belong to on Facebook that you know, like the one that you've got where when it comes up lives, you're a little bit inspired about what everybody else is doing. Those, you need that tribe. So whatever that tribe is for you, sometimes you just can't do this stuff on your own. And sometimes you just need to, you know, be able to flick someone an email and say, hey, I'm really stuck. I don't know what to do from here. You know, I've done this, this, and this, and now I'm drawing a blank. And especially if you're the kind of person who is a procrastinator, who has so much to do that they don't do anything. And I find personally that a lot of women with businesses and families to run and households to run, and they forget the self-care for themselves. They put everybody else first and creates a lot of angst and stressful environment for them. And so sometimes just decluttering at night, cleaning up your environment, cleaning up your money spaces, getting your head clear on exactly where you are, spending time meditating, if you want to use that word, I don't, I think about it when I run, on your goals. You know, what do you want to do this year? What are the things that you want to do? It could be, and, you know, paying off your credit card is exciting. Not really. It's a good goal, but it, you know, you have to set the ones that give you the butterflies, you know. So you're going to pay off your credit card in the next 6 months because you want a trip to Italy. And once that's paid off, you can start saving for your trip to Italy. Do you know? And then that is that's the goal, but you've got this first step. So when people say to me, oh, $100 a week into this credit card that I'm never going to use, and this week I won't do it, and next week I won't do it, and then I see them in 2 months and they've not made a payment. Whereas if they have got a future goal and the credit card payment is just a step, that's beautiful, because then they start thinking, you know, dreaming about it.
I like that too, because I have on my whiteboard, I can just see it here, I have all my debt. And I've written my incoming goal for the month, and then incoming money goal for the month, and then, you know, what I'm paying out. And I hadn't looked at it that way I think it's exciting to pay a credit card off. I'm just like, yes, like, that's great. But I also like what you just said there. So I'm going to implement that as well. I'm going to go back over my whiteboard and put the reason next to it. Yeah, that's great.
And you know, you're in a very transitional space at the moment. You're on the precipice of going woof. Yeah. So you need to, you know, so you need to be really clear on your goals. Like, I just got goosebumps. You need to be really clear on, and you don't have to have goals that are like firm and set in the, it just, and they can't necessarily be wishy-washy, but very specific on the things that, okay, I'm going to pay that off because I want to do this. And then I want to be, so mine, when I look at my situation, mine is because I love being philanthropic. You know, I love the idea of giving to others that they don't know I'm doing it, and makes me feel good about myself. And it's an internal thing. I've done that since forever. Mine is also that I want the next investment. You know, I like contributing to my investments. I like watching them grow. And the more you contribute your dollar cost average into an investment, the faster it grows. And while we're on that point, the debt is not a bad thing. You know, consumer debt, bad debt, credit cards, car loans, those sorts of things, bad debt, that's crappy. You got to get rid of that as fast as you can. But aspire to good debt. So aspire to having investment debt that buys you investment properties, commercial sheds, businesses. You know, you think if you got into a helicopter and you flew over a major capital city, who saved up to pay cash for those high rises? No one. You know, it's the power of leverage. So if you want that for yourself, I mean, you guys know this because, you know, you leverage relationships, you leverage time, you know, all that sort of stuff. Consider money and borrowing as a leverage tool. And at some point you want to be in a position where you've got the income coming in, because it gives you the power to multiply.
So can you just say,
a classic example is, you could invest.
Hang on, Jodie. Sorry. Can you just go back? It keeps, we're cutting in and out a lot, but I can know we can cut bits, but you just said something there that I don't want it to be cut. Do you remember what you just said back there a second ago? Was a key part.
Yeah. Okay. So the ability to leverage. So the good debt, the investment debt, that allows you to buy assets that you otherwise wouldn't be able to get, you know? So, and those assets then put you in a position to make more money. So, you know, you can create strategies where you might be contributing to an investment each month, and buying into a market of whatever description, Australian shares, international shares, whatever it is. But you could put a leveraging position on that where you borrow more money, put that in, and then that contributes as well, and you're contributing, and all of a sudden it's growing exponentially. So, you know, if you were to even just Google the power of leverage, you'll find that everything in our world has got elements of unlocking the ability to work with something else. So whether that's a relationship it's exactly true for money. So the analogy I used before about getting in a helicopter and flying over the buildings, you know, all of that is good debt. And then when you start to learn more around that side of things, you start thinking, when you, which is what I love empowering people to learn, is that good debt is a beautiful tool for wealth creation. You just need to make sure things like the asset that you're buying is a beautiful asset. You've done your due diligence on it, worst case scenario and that sort of thing, that it's creating an income, that it's got the ability for capital growth, that your ratios are correct, that you're not borrowing too much or too little. So there's all of that, but you know what? That's just facts and figures. And people can tell you that very simply. But it's just starting to realize there's this whole world out there and you've got access to it. And a classic example is, let's just say you've got $7,000 cash that you've saved. You could go and put $7,000 into an investment and it sits there, and you might put in $500 a month towards it or whatever, and you grow it. Or you could lease the use of $100,000 and put $100,000 into an investment using your $7,000, because it's 7%, which is typically what you'd pay. That's the loan repayment to lease the use of $100,000. So $100,000 into a market is going to do greater returns than $7,000 ever will. And then because you borrowed that $100,000, the $7,000 that you're using of your money is a tax deduction to you. So it helps minimize your tax. You're borrowing someone's money to grow wealth. So, and that is super exciting. And that's where you start to get the momentum and the real wealth, you know, and there's a lot of strategies around all of that. And it's very exciting. And that's where the financial education comes into it for me, because too many people get caught up in the sales, you know, flogging products. But you know, you learn this stuff for yourself, and then you can see through a salesperson. You can smell one a mile away. So then it just gives you that leveraging tool to go, okay, well, what's the better use of my money, and how can I grow this exponentially and do it within the parameters that meet how I feel how I feel ethically. You know, there's a lot of people at the moment that only invest in ethical funds and things like that. And it all comes down to education. But, you know, doing those five things, clearing up your situation, getting your headspace right around the scarcity mindset, starting to realize that there's this whole world out there that's totally capable of being your world, that you truly deserve it. And then doing little things like stepping that forward. I'm not just paying off the credit card, because this is one step to me going to Italy or whatever it is for you. So I love it. And I think that when people learn more about it, they start going, you know what, this is good. This lights me up. I can see that I've got hope here. You know, I don't have to sit here in the environment that I'm in. The other thing too is that it's okay for you to want things. You know, it's okay for you to want to work hard or not work hard. You know, so sometimes it comes to people a lot easier in certain environments, but it's okay for you to want things. It's not a greed mentality. You're not a bad person because you'd like a nice home and a nice car, and you want your kids to go to nice schools, and you want to be able to go on holidays, and you know that is a beautiful part of the human condition. So and that's what we're learning in this lifetime. And a lot of people do feel like they don't deserve it, or, you know, they have this block around it. But it really is okay to want for all of that. And I find that the more money a person has, the more good they can do with it. So, you know, they can support local businesses. You know, when friends ring up and they say, oh, I'm going into an MLM business that is, you know, you have a shake twice a day and, you know, or I'm signed up into this thing, you know, often you go, I can't afford to support you. Whereas when you've got money, you can go, you know what, I'll be one of your clients, I'll sign me up, you know. And if someone's got a charity dinner on, you know, you can buy the ticket, you can buy a table of 10, you can go, you can, you know, buy that artwork that you wonder where you're going to hang in the house because it's part of a charitable thing. You know, you can set up direct debit donations. You can support your local church groups if you're into church. You can give to your sporting communities. You can buy them new equipment. You know, I just think that it's not necessarily a greed thing for you because you want to stockpile it all. It really... it empowers you to do more for others. And then the best thing is that when you're successful, there'll be somebody in your environment coming up underneath you. And this is what I love about what you do is you're sharing that, you're filtering down that knowledge. You know, this is what worked for me, this is what I've done, this is the, you know, and you become that place that gives them hope and that excitement. And, you know, I think, you know, collectively we all sort of feed off each other, and we're all one sort of environment. We're all just trying to get ahead in the world. But yeah, starting with your own environment, cleaning all that stuff up, realizing that there's more to it.
I got excited. Yeah, I'm like, okay, cool. That's $7,000 to the $100,000. All right, Jody, yep, I'm going to be coming to you. I did. I'm like, oh, that's the first time I got really excited. And the credit card thing with Italy. Italy is on my list this year. So I was like,
happy good. Day. I love Italy.
I've never been, so I'm excited. All right, we got a few minutes left. So I want to just really quickly, like 2 minutes on each thing. Can you go the top thing you want to say on action versus inspiration?
Okay, so you can surround yourself with affirmations to you blue in the face. They won't help unless you're doing the work. So I would prefer to see you put your affirmations up. I've got them everywhere anyway, on my mirrors and things. I actually need to sit down and do an action plan. What am I going to do today that's going to step me forward? And just every day, one little thing might be, today I'm going to look at my super statements. I don't know what they mean, but I'm going to look at them. I'm going to get them out of the drawer. Tomorrow I'm going to have a look at my credit card statement and see what I can stop in the bleed. You know, what subscriptions are coming out that I don't need? What, you know, what can I cancel that I could go without with for 6 months? Those sorts of things. Just every little day do a little bit and work on that mindset. Even scribble it in pen across the mirror in your bathroom. You know, I will focus on abundance mindset, or whatever it is that resonates.
Love it. Perfect. All right. And 2 minutes on GFC2.
Okay, so we're in a situation, so I talk for an hour on this in a speaking environment, but nutshell, after the GFC, the US markets went boom because they were printing money artificially. So their market is artificially inflated. That's all you need to know. It's all the technical beside it, but that's all you need to know is artificially inflated. China's market, hugely artificially inflated, to the point that no one has a clue how they're even doing it, and everything's fake about the China market. There are two biggest global economic powerhouses, you know, and we've got this thing called a geopolitical risk, right? So everybody's seen Trump and how he's loose, you know, loose cannons shooting off everywhere, creating dramas. I'm not a fan, as you can tell. But there's a geopolitical risk. There's the issues with the inflated markets. We've got issues around with the lowest interest rates in history. So if governments want to stimulate people to spend and stuff, they keep dropping interest rates. And in a lot of parts of the world, the interest rates are zero. So then they go into negative interest rates, which means the banks pay you to have your money there. I mean, this is absurd. We've got the highest global debt. The global debt levels are insurmountable. There is not a foreseeable generation that can pay that down, and they keep increasing the debt ceiling. At some point, this needs to implode. And I'm not even mentioning bond market bubbles or currency issues or anything. So, and that's a very doomsday approach. The best thing about being in the Australian environment is we have hyperinflated property markets in certain pockets in Australia. We're protected. And I tell you why. It's because our government, after the GFC, had a mining boom to back up what was going on. You know, after the GFC, we had this beautiful, the world wanted our commodities. So we had a mining boom, and that helped keep us afloat and stopped us going into recession, you know. This time around, we don't have a mining boom. That's a drama. But what we do have that's a really good positive is that our government's never printed money. So our market hasn't done what the other markets have done. We've just gone ho-hum, 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 and it's slowly gone up. But when shit hits the fan, for want of a better term, we're protected a lot because it's not fake. It's very real. And the government still has the ability to print money if they need to, like the US did, if something goes pear-shaped. So we are in a very strong position in that respect. So I wouldn't go out and mortgage yourselves to the eyeballs to do things. I would be a little bit protective, a little bit preemptive. I would be buffering your situation a little bit, becoming more aware, all of those sorts of things. And you know what? The markets do this thing all the time. You know, it's just the time it takes to recover. So, you know, so at the moment, you know, someone in my environment, I'm stockpiling equity and cash positions because I like the idea of when it does drop, I throw money in, you know. And more millionaires are made in a downturn than they're ever made in an upswing. So, and, you know, the markets will always be there. They'll always move in peaks and troughs. It's a matter of just keeping the assets really stable, you know, being smart about it and being aware that there's a bigger picture and that Australia does get caught up in the contagion of them. So, yeah. But I can't tell you when it's going to happen. I wrote a really good article in September 2015 that was peer-reviewed by a lot of colleagues. Are we headed for a GFC2? It's 3 pages, but it's been on all the stock forums and everywhere in all the magazines. So if anybody wants to read it, flick me a message on Facebook or Twitter or somewhere and I'll get it to you.
Thank you. Final last words.
Yeah. Don't give money the positive energies. You know, don't give it all the negative energies. Don't surround it with all, it doesn't deserve it for a start. And it'll just keep bringing you and giving you the same stuff. And just know that, and because I've been there, I've done this twice, I've built wealth twice. So just know that it's so possible. It's so possible. And if you can't see it right now, it's just because the forest for the trees thing, somebody else with fresh eyes, more opportunities, just allow yourself to be open to accepting new opportunities and things like that. Have your eyes open to learn, you know, about money and wealth, and realize that it's not a greed thing and that what blocks are there for you. And when you start doing that, within a couple of months, it's crazy how it changes, you know. And you do still go through peaks and troughs, but overall I think people, yeah, they're quite often astounded at when they draw the line in the sand and go, from today, things turn around.
Awesome. And just one more thing from me. There's a book that I've been reading. I'm back the sixth time now to attempt to read it. It's called The Magic and it's all about gratitude. And just for anyone listening today, if you're looking for something extra to help you as well on top of everything that Jodie has shared, that's a brilliant book to learn gratitude, to expand your space, to be able to receive more.
Beautiful.
Jodie, where can our viewers and listeners find you?
Yeah, so Jodie Nolan, JodieNolan, .com, or Equus Group, which is EQUIS, like the horse, group.com.au, and then all the Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, it's just Jodie Nolan. So if you search me, you'll find me.
Excellent. And I'll put all the links on all the platforms where I can. Jodie, thank you so much for joining us in this space.
You're so welcome.
Thank you. And to each and every single one of our listeners and viewers today, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure and I look forward to tuning in with you next week. Until then, much love.